Bas Nayake, HH, 7th of November, 1966.
And what is your feeling about the condition of the villages, economically and socially?
Economically, it's a very bad village. If the tank is restored, then his economic condition will be sound. You know, I take the NCP for instance. There are no rivers in the NCP. So this is the season to collect the water. In the rainy season, you must collect the water. That is why they have built so many hundreds of tanks. And the tanks are in a series. One tank fills, the field water fills the next, the field water that fills the next, like that. The whole idea is to retain in collection, space of collection, as much water as possible before it goes to the sea. Then this water, after spilling, you know, about five tanks, goes into a river. That is again dammed and turned to again tanks. Then again it goes into a river. It's dammed again and turned to another tank. So that the same amount of water is over and over again for cultivation.
So I was wondering whether in little ways, like say for instance the wearing of slippers, the use of torches and these outward signs, you felt that they had possessions which they might not have had 40, 50 years ago.
Yes, but those didn't exist in such numbers then, when the torches are there, I think.
Yes, but still it costs money to buy these things.
But it is more satisfactory than the huluwat, you know, the torches they make. It is more satisfactory, although it is not as effective against the snake. They are frightened of the huluwat, but not of the torch. But then again, in the dry zone, making huluwat is not so easy. You have got the material for it. Now in the wet zone where the coconut space, you can make it.
Now how are you marshalling the priests to help them economically?
You see, the, now I have formed Sangha Sabhas.
Yes.
I could give you one of the booklets I have prepared as a questionnaire for the bhikkhus in order to set about their work. Education, roads, banks, medical facilities, and all other problems. In every temple, I am placing a book called the Complaints Book, called the Durgyani Vidipasa. That is, if all the complaints and grievances of the people, they can go and say the priest and record it. Idea is to take action on them, but often the government doesn't listen to them, and the priest's action becomes ineffective. But the idea is to bring the people to the temple and make the temple the center of village activity. In some areas, they've done very well. Where the bhikkhus are very active, they are able to get about, they've done a lot of work. In some areas, the bhikkhus are not so active, and then no work gets done.
This sort of work would, apart from education, it would be rather unfamiliar to the bhikkhus in the light of past recent history.
Yes, unfamiliar to some, but not unfamiliar to others. You see, there are some who have been working on these lands for a long time. Now in a place called Hakuru Vela, in the Murugiri Valley area, I came across the bhikkhu. They were so interested in village welfare. Whenever irrigation work has been constructed, go and stay there to see that the contractor does not cheat. When a hospital in Milti is there, then the man is doing wrong, he goes into the government agent, gets the director of public work, the district engineer. He's very nuisance to contractors, but he gets the work done, and the people like him. So when they have anything to, he's always on the road, you see, on the move. If people come and say anything, then he at once go with them, and to attend to it. That way there are many who are interested in the people's work. But in the town, I notice mostly in the town there is no scope for such activity. In the villages, there is ample scope.
There is one possible danger that the villagers might make use of it to present unjustified grievances. So to take an example, if a chap who has got allotment under certain conditions under this new ordinance had not kept the conditions and been evicted, he might use this means, and in all honesty the society, Sangha Sabha, might pressurize the government to put him back.
No, when the DRO will tell him at once.
Pardon?
The DRO,
yes,
whom we approach, has been said that this man has not kept the term. They approach the village officers first, generally. Where it's a matter where the central government has to be addressed, they write to the minister. And the Prime Minister, at my request, has given direction to all ministers to pay special attention to any elevator, so many things in Kandapada.
Mm-hmm.
That has worked in some areas. Some areas it has not worked.
Oh, so the present government is quite cooperative?
Yes. I hope to get more cooperation, not enough.
Financially?
Not financially. So far they haven't given any financial assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I am personally against this financial assistance from a government for this reason. Then the government expects you to be obedient to them.
Mm-hmm.
It is very good if we can avoid any kind of grants or aid from the government.
And it works the other way too. It will encourage the principle of self-help.
Yes, as much as possible. But you see, our villages, when charity is such, that most people say, where is the government coming into this? They have often asked me, where is the government coming into this? We must get some recognition from the government. I said, you must be strong enough to get government's recognition without you going after the government. So, that is happening in certain areas. Government is forced to recognize the movement.
In fact, this is a problem because in the late 19th century and early 20th century, especially earlier, even earlier than that, they used village communal labor to maintain the tax. But my impression is, it's only an impression, but from what irrigation people say, it would appear that with the growth of civilization and advance of roads, the more civilized the village becomes, the greater the reluctance on the part of the village community to perform this gratuitous labor.
No, that I think has been destroyed by the Petty Lands Act.
Oh.
You see, the village scheme of things in Petty areas is that irrigation settler, or one of the very large, who has a place in the irrigation audience,
mm-hmm.
he is the man who sees that all the fields are cultivated, that water is issued at the right time, that if there is a tank, the tank is clean and repaired at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
There are irrigation channels, the channels are cleaned at the right time. The Petty Lands Act introduced in place of the village headman a cultivation committee. Cultivation committee is elected. Irrigation headman also was elected. But that was one boss. Now the Petty Lands Act has a cultivation committee, the secretary. Now the irrigation headman was rewarded for his services by an ancient traditional share.
Mm-hmm. One dinner.
Yes. So that if he exerted himself and saw that the area was fertile and every bit of land was cultivated, he got more. If any fields were not productive, he got less. Now under this scheme, the villager had to pay 6 rupees an acre with the land yields little or more. So the more most productive fields pay the same tax as the least productive. Then when the agricultural committee came into existence, in some cases their income is poor, in some cases they are not care, they don't care about the welfare of the political committee. The tanks are not cleared in time.
It's a question of divided responsibility.
Yes. This is what the village has said. And everywhere I went, the village said, we don't want this agricultural committee. I said, why do you elect? Because they have to select. Well, these government of here come and say this is better, therefore they agreed. But now we find it is not so. They now the agricultural committee has to be informed from the secretary. Now in one particular area I went to Naravia, quite recently.
Naravia.
They collect 2,400 rupees for that committee. Out of that 1,200 goes to the secretary. The other 1,200 is not enough to do the work. For which they must pay. Will they say, now we can't do free labor, we pay. We pay tax.
Mm-hmm.
If you tax, you must do the work.
Yes.
If you don't tax, we will do the work. So it is not anything that's modern development. It is a consequence of the Petty Lands Act.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the 1930s, a sort of associated sphere, the village tribunals, how did you think they worked judicially?
They are run today.
Mm-hmm.
No difference.
No difference. Huh? Have they helped government in any way to reduce cases or?
One thing, the change between, now there are law judges. At that time there were lay and lawyer mixed.
Mm-hmm.
Some judges were lawyers, some judges were laymen. But now all laymen have disappeared and there are lawyers. But confidence in these courts has not been restored. At one time judges were not, there was corruption. but I think these are the affairs are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But people have no confidence for the reason that they fear that there is some official pull in every case. You see, man can't appear a lawyer, lawyer can't appear.
Yes.
So then the poor man is overawed by the presence in which he is ushered in. He asks, are you, no, there's no question of law, did you do this or did you not do that, and then fine, 500 rupees or whatever it is, fine. So that they submit to it because it's a authoritative tribunal. But if they had the choice, they go to the other courts.
But isn't this a more tangible, for to them, a more tangible and informal form of law court?
There is, well, that form is, that amount of informality, I don't know whether they appreciate it. Because everywhere, when there is a case of any import, a case of unimport, they don't care, means a fine of 250 or some kind of order.
Mm-hmm.
They seek some method of getting to the court.
This is funny because, I mean, compared to the courts, relatively, this approaches the idea of justice under the coconut tree, relatively speaking.
But then is there justice under the coconut tree?
Yes, that is the point.
You see, the president is really a prosecutor and judge.
Yes.
Then he, hasn't that detachment that is necessary for him to give satisfaction to all the litigants who appear before him. Some presidents are better than others. Some are so authoritarian, they say, now, is this? Yes. And then there's no question about it. You must give, pay a man for it. You see, they administer what is called rough and ready justice, which the villagers submit, because it's too expensive to fight against it. But they're not under authority.
The point is, there are sort of two legal systems. You can have the impartial judge, who is not connected with the case. Or you could have the executive officer cum judge, who knows the village and knows the squabbles and internal situation, and uses that inner knowledge to at least bring it to bear on the particular case.
Yes, if he has the knowledge of the condition of the place, that's an advantage. But there is also a disadvantage that he will take one side or the other according to his bias, whichever it is.
Yes.
Now, for instance, now take these land settlement ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
They were also judges and executive officers. Now, some were liberal, some were strict. Mm-hmm. When a village made a claim to a land, and he made sufficient evidence that he had some kind of activity in the land, some said, all right, a poor man, give him the land. Others ask him to produce evidence of deeds and bring witnesses and so on, which he is unable to do. So the strict man deprives the man of his land. The liberal man gives him the land. And all executive officers who are have quasi-judicial function to perform find it difficult to arrive at the real position, middle position which they should enjoy. Have some are strict, some are big, important, some are good, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now in the case with judge, he is not expected to know anything about the case. I want to assist him. So that he waits till each side presents the case. But there are disadvantages in that system also. If unless the judge takes an initiative, he will see that certain material has not been produced by one side. He won't call for it. Which may be available. They lose the case because they fail to produce it. That's one of the disadvantages of our present system.
Mm-hmm. You see, I've heard of a case or several cases from a land settlement officer who said that he knew the ins and outs of a certain village, and there was a dispute, land dispute, one of the most common forms of litigation about that village. And he read the decision and he found that the judge was wrong. You see, he thinks it was a case of injustice. But it was not a case of injustice on the evidence that was put before the judge. But he, as land settlement officer, had seen all the deeds and been to the village. And he knew that this decision was wrong. Now,
that can happen.
That can happen.
Even in other cases, it can happen. Evidence, for instance, which is rejected, if available, that may decide the other way. Now, a liberal land settlement officer was Felix Jan.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very experienced land settlement officer. liberal, and also he had intimate knowledge, maybe as he's been on the mm-hmm. job for a long time, of the different localities.
When the British inclined to be rather strict, the British LSO?
No, they also had liberal as well as strict.
It varied.
Mm-hmm. Varied with the individuals. Some were very generous in the sense that they were very judicial minded.
Any you can remember?
For the interior service. He has lands as much as sometimes very, very, very good.
Oh, I see. No.
But then the other side.
Leech, Sands, I know.
Sands was a very, very conscientious man. Mm-hmm. I think if he was in the lands, that would be very good. Oh. Very conscientious man. Mm-hmm. There were others now who were there.
I don't know about Hudson, Stace was there.
Hudson was not good.
Hudson. Hudson. No, he was never a...
Never happened.
No, he was
with a G.A. Yeah.
There was a chap called Hudson too.
Yes, there was Hudson.
Davidson. Light.
Light was a conscientious chap. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, he was over-conscientious. He would come to a decision.
Too fussy.
Come to a decision. He had found great difficulty to this class and this class.
I was wondering whether the whole British system of justice brought law rather than justice, processes and...
I think fairly there. I mean, any system has its imperfections and its good points. I'll take the conflict system. It has its good points, so the judge takes a more active part.
Mm-hmm.
The bad point is when the judge becomes overzealous. Because now if the content system prevails, or some feature prevails, whereby the judge says, he has part of the present law.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not exercised generally. Call for all the evidence that he thinks is relevant to the case, himself. Now, in the conduct system, judge has taken more active part in the conduct of the case. Well, that has its advantages.
Mm-hmm.
Our system, where the judge has to be moved by one side or the other to take an action, I think has its disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
But some judges, even under our system, fill up the gap of the disadvantages by taking an active part in the case.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the village tribunals were meant to exclude lawyers and legal form, but didn't many villagers adopt the practice of getting coached up beforehand by proctors and...
No, there must have been fellows in the village who are, you know, have some kind of experience of court work and so on, who can tell them, but those people are dangerous.
Yes, younger proctors.
Yes, because they are too one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take a detached view of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they made even such a fabrication of evidence.
In fact, there is sometimes a general feeling among academics and even among civil servants that many of the proctors and lawyers of Ceylon have rather been like parasites on the villagers, especially the unsophisticated.
Yes, the villager thinks so.
The villager thinks so?
Yes. Even Mr. Arabella says the lawyers are parasites. He was a great lawyer who must have made thousands of rupees out of lawyers, out of villages. No, I think in some cases our advocates are too overstayed.
Too?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now they even are higher. You see, the profession, legal profession, is supposed to be a profession in which the subject is expected to have somebody who will plead his cause,
mm-hmm.
regardless of the remuneration. That is why in the barrister's gown, you have at the back a small pocket, which is not really a pocket, but it comes from ancient days, when the money was put in from behind. He did not know what the fee was. He pleaded the cause. Today, the fee is the thing that moves the advocate. I remember a very leading advocate who say, no oil, no oil, the machine won't work. So that is the wrong side of it.
And weren't there a few proctors and perhaps even advocates, but especially proctors and notaries, who in the course of their profession acquired lots of land?
Yes, they were well-known proctors, they were well-known. Partition cases, especially in partition cases, they financed, for example, a poor man has no money, they spend the stamp money and everything, financed the whole partition case, and then take their fees at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that any poor, if he gets to watch the partition, went to him. And then he made money because he financed the undertaking.
Now I was wondering whether there were few who could be classed as land grabbers.
When this partition law, either buy the land, or tell the man you sell the furniture. Or you, there are many now down south. Partition work is, the most bulk of the partition work is in Matra and Goa, in the mountain Goa. In this area there's hardly any partition because under the Kandyan system of inheritance, not much room for partition.
What about the Vijayaratnas in Sabaragamo and A. Vikramasinghe in Kegor and Vandaputan?
That was land work.
Yes.
Cemetery land work.
No, I was wondering whether Vikramasinghe, for instance, I know he's, or at least I've been told that the people in that area dislike him.
Yes.
Yeah. So I at least
he's. That is because he acquired land. What other people? You know, he bought land and enlarged his tenure land area.
Because he's a Lokan, from Lokan to family.
Yes. Well, there are some lawyers who do make use of their point, some advocates also, when they buy questionable titles, although it's there, but they know it's quite safe.
Yes, in fact, there were a class of Sirenese who could be said to have been land brokers who bought, say, claims from the eager married women.
Yes. Those days, especially those days, they bought what was called village title, which a villager couldn't defend, but which they were prepared to defend. So that way they made a lot of money. People like it, everything would have bought village title. Because no title, chair of title deed. But it's safe. These people have been enjoying it for years.
Prescriptive.
Yes, thousands of acres of forest. Now Vanderbilt bought like that. People have some kind of document which says they're entitled to all the land within certain boundaries. Now that man can't fight that case if ever he goes through.
What Vanderbilt was it?
Four Vanderbilt, each man, A.J. Vanderbilt. Father of the present man. He is one of the biggest land grabbers. Very rich man, very stingy man.
You see, there was a criticism of the Wastelands Ordinance and the Land Settlement Department in the 20s, political one. And while some of them were no doubt well-intentioned, there is some suspicion about people like A. Vikramasinghe and Bathuwanthu Dave, who were criticizing the British on one hand and getting land on the other.
Yes. He got on the Sankatiya, but on the Dava Satukashaya, the Sankatiya transaction. The largest land that needs to be bought.
Where?
Sankatiya. Sankatiya. Vandaputan, Markandan, Bathuwanthu Dava and some others. The Wastelands fight was waged by Korea.
But wasn't Victor, his brother, also a bit of a lander?
No, I don't think so.
Chilaveria?
Yes, there was a case he had with the villagers. But I don't think he bought land from the villagers.
Oh, I see.
But Sea Korea was in the forefront of that fight.
Yes, that was very early on.
But it exists today. A modified form, but same kind of machinery. You have to presume to be the property of the crown unless you prove certain things, which you can't prove after this length of time.
Yes, after the land commission, they found it quite a useful thing and decided to retain it.
Yes. So, temples have been deprived of land, poor people. At the moment, I've got a claim made by some villagers who sent all their documents for me to look into it and see what relief I can get them. You see, there is room in this country, either for the state to provide or for some public benefaction to provide a number of people who can advise the poor on how they can assert their rights. Now the lawyer, they must have money to go to a lawyer. Well then, if they are too frightened of litigation, most villagers say, well, nobody acquaints a man. I'll take a typical example, now Gattayana. Kutlam is the court. To get to the main road where the buses go, he has to go 18 miles on foot. Then if he has a resident, he got to go by bus to Kutlam. If he has a case, if he goes 10 times, his work is interrupted. Walk for 36 miles a day or then walk to the court and wait there. So they must take justice to the people. It's an expensive thing.
This is precisely what I was in favor of, because when I said law rather than justice, that was one angle I was thinking of, this distance that they have to travel, the money they have to spend eating out perhaps sometimes they have to stay the night. Are itinerating courts all that expensive?
To the government?
Mm-hmm.
Expensive. Or body doing yoga and other jhana meditation. But the ethnic course also have a disadvantage if they can meet. For instance, if this course sits here once a fortnight, cases get postponed for 14 days at a time.
Yes, I see.
And may not be taken up again for the next 14 days like that. But it has advantage in that it's near the client's home. But then again, it's a disadvantage in that lawyers will charge more to go to the court.
Mm-hmm.
Now take, for instance, they have several courts. This is not alternative, but additional courts. Now, a Kandy lawyer, that's one of Mangalam, I think. If you went to Kandy, you could retain the same lawyer 50 rupees. But if the case is Mahananda, he will charge 100 rupees. Kahai. So they are expensive from the client's point of view.
Yes.
So one has to provide some kind of free legal aid on a much wider scale than exists in Sri Lanka today. If now there is a certain amount of free legal aid, very few people know what the legal aid is and how to get it. But unless you provide free legal aid, lots of people will rather give up their rights than fight for them. Because it's cheaper not to fight for them, which is bad for the country.
But sometimes, isn't it true that villagers and even the big, richer families have litigation over and above the extent of the value of what they're fighting for?
That is really when they're not fighting for the actual bone of contention, not being the land, but prestige on either side.
Mm-hmm.
Or some kind of principle. Sometimes, a decision, they think that if it's a number of lands inherited from a common ancestor, they think that the fight on this land would also settle the dispute in regard to the other lands.
Mm-hmm.
This land then being not worth the fight, they fight over it because it's other issues are involved.
What is the general opinion about the legal judges as distinct from the civil service judges? Were they better or no better?
I think it was 50-50, not much difference.
Mm-hmm.
Only they say that the civil servant judges did not talk so much as the royal judges. But the civil servant judge must have been silent discreetly. Because if they spoke, they might expose their ignorance to the law.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, I must say the civil servant judges have functioned very satisfactorily.
Mm-hmm.
They have been occasional. It fits, but as a body, they were satisfactory.
Mm-hmm. Turning to the constitutional aspect, what did you think of the Donamo Constitution? I don't know what experience you had of it, but...
Well, the Donamo Constitution started in 1931.
31.
Went on till...
47, 48.
In the whole building. I have been seeing the Donamo Constitution from the inception, since the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a committee system. It had its advantages and its disadvantages. Committee system gave everyone a share in the inner working of the government, participation in the working of the government. But it had disadvantages in that the minister had to keep the members of the committee satisfied in regard to various demands they made. Not personally, but in regard to their constituencies. I think, generally speaking, it was well managed.
Mm-hmm. Was it rather slow and cumbersome?
No, it's not as slow as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
One advantage was this, that the backbenchers had a part in having the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the ministers were safe. Now today, the backbenchers and ministers are two different groups. One section is the government, the others are the followers of the government. I think they gave it up. Was there a big demand? I can't remember now. Whether there was a big demand for its abolition, it was, I think, merely saying, a feeling, an inferiority complex, that with independence you must have a constitution like England.
Mm. This Westminster monarchy as a talisman.
Yes, they thought the vertical system has advantages. Its disadvantages were that members of the committee could obstruct the minister. But then Lord Minister can't, he's not an autocrat. If he can't carry the committee with him, then perhaps his action is not popular.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of the legal secretary, one of the three policemen? Do you think he was able to, say, for the sake of argument, he was somewhat reactionary. Could he hinder the ministers? In the drafting and...
The drafting was the legal draftman. Normally he was under the legal secretary. But everything could go direct to the legal draftman. He wasn't an obstruction, that's it. But if he thought that something was illegal and the minister wanted to do it, then he would stop it. But today, you see, one advantage of that system was legislation which was contrary to the principles of legislation and of justice did not get through so easily as now. You see, till the Donoghue, till the Thornbury is introduced, legislation which had a clause that any act under it could not be called in a questioning court of law was not enacted. Till Thornbury came in, till the Thornbury Constitution. Then the first bit of legislation that introduced it was the Emergency Act. And that was enacted. That was followed. Now, no, today, the other day, it has been. Cannot be agitated in the court of law and so on, anything under it. So they are building up lots of bits of legislation which exclude the court, which is a dangerous thing.
To personal liberty?
Including personal liberty. Now take the Emergency Act. Personal liberty by calling question anything under the Emergency Act. Regulations shall not be called in court of law.
Personally, what was your reaction to the grant of universal franchise in 31?
I think it was too early.
You thought it was?
Not, I didn't.
Well, personally, I favored it. I favor it because otherwise it might have led to the sort of growth of an oligarchy.
You see, it was it was inevitable in any case. Question of whether it was some in 1931 or later. So it came in 31 and it took some time to get going. People realized. But you see, the danger of it lay in this, that the people's needs weren't sufficiently attended to, so that the opposition to the government, the party, could make people conscious that the government had not looked after them, and then they could get votes on their way. But then that's existing in any system of franchise. People vote for the side which they give the best, greatest benefit. But you see now in our country, now I saw the other day, yesterday or the day before, in some election in America, the main issue is about Vietnam, nothing about their country. That is, as far as the people's basic needs are concerned, they're met. And in our country, we've got a long way to get the people's basic needs. So that's why the issues are parochial and local.
But I don't think that the two-party system, or really just the party system, has its disadvantages in that one party is trying to do certain good things, good for the good of the country, simply because the other party will make political capital.
The party system has its disadvantages. And in our country more so, because there are so many needs of people which have yet to be met. So you can accentuate that aspect of it and destroy one party and the other party to gain advantage. Party system has also this disadvantage. It immobilizes the brains of one side. One party gets into power. They don't make use of the talent on the other side. It's half the talent of the country that's moving at a time. It's so in England too. And they can say they're out. So they have a talent in the talent that's called in. So they are, I prefer the American system with certain modifications, where one man has the authority for 3 years. He is free to select his advisors. They need not be elected men. The prime minister, under this system of elective government, prime minister is confined to those who are elected.
And didn't Banda suffer from that?
Yes, he did. So that the best talent in the country cannot be utilized for the country's government.
How would you explain the growth of so many splinter parties in Ceylon?
But are they actually forming it in some samadhi?
Well, even they were split into various groups.
That is personal rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the original samadhi, then they both broke up into Lenin's and Trotsky's. Maybe each one wanted leadership, there's no place in the party for two leaders. So you have two sections of two leaders. Now in Israel, there are more parties.
Israel?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's always a coalition government, almost never one party.
Mm-hmm.
So the winner, or the major party, has always to come to terms with other parties. But six parties.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, we are not troubled with too many parties, but some time ago it was so. This Basa Peramula, there was the NDP, there was the LSSP, there was the LSSP something.
Yes.
Then there was the Communist China, Communist Russia. So, that is. But they are not parties of any strength, because they are divided. But I certainly think in the reforms of the Constitution, we should not just continue to copy England. Because even the English Constitution has its imperfections. Over the years, any system of government is bound to develop certain traits which are not satisfactory. So even the Western Constitution might be having certain defects. But you must have one man. Now, you see, say we take the elections. The elections are fought, Dadi Senanayake or Sirima Bandaranayake. Well, people are used to that. So when the election meeting, they say, now he must return Dadi to power. And vote for so-and-so to return Dadi to power. So people are used to that, having one leader man as leader.
Mm-hmm.
So then why not vote for him?
Why not have a sort of presidential type?
Yes. And useless semi-government like now. He just rubber stamp. Whatever he said to him, he dare not say no. He has no power to say no.
And what about the Senate? Don't you think that
useless? Mm-hmm. Because they also can't control any legislation. Either you have a Senate which is effective. You don't just want a debating club
mm-hmm.
of people who waste time before the bill becomes law by discussing it, because if they made it, it comes back and then after.
Returning to the Donamo, what did you think of those first few elections in 31 and 36? Was it possible for politicians to win them by through corrupt means, by bringing in hordes of impersonators and...
Not in theory, but in practice, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. You're not familiar with what happened.
No. There were impersonations, mm-hmm. such a large case.
Mm-hmm.
Even the law of the crown was impersonated. And he went to vote, somebody had voted for him.
And there was that big controversy over Jorge de Silva in 47, and he was, after election petition, he was unseated.
Uh-huh.
And
are we going to take it?
It's a question of bribing electors and things like that. Defamation, I think.
Uh-huh. Bribery is a thing that takes place generally in election. It's only some have it in a more refined form. In one form or another, every member has bribery.
I was wondering whether in the context of the Donamo times, when the voters were perhaps less experienced, a politician could bribe the big bugs in an area, bribe through favors and otherwise, the headmen and the influential men, and therefore secure block votes.
Yes, in the early days it could have happened, because there were headmen to influence. And the people also were not conscious of how powerful their vote was.
Mm.
It could happen in the early days. That's how it actually went on. You went to an area, got hold of the influential man, and then said, it's all right. But even now, there are areas like that.
What do you think of the headman system then, and it's rather new?
New system is unsatisfactory.
The new system is Grama Seva?
Yes, but he had all the duties of the village headman.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Vidhani Arachi who performed civil functions. Village headman attended to all the functions and was on the criminal side of it. But you see, the village headman, under the old system, was a man of the place who knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And with this present practice of the government, same as in colonial days, say you write a letter to the minister, you go to the permanent secretary. Then if it's a matter concerning anything, whether the GA has to go to the GA. Yes, and the DRO. The DRO says, the government, they were called village headman.
Uh-huh.
And his word is the word that carries with. In fact, quite recently I was told in some place, the village head man, the Grama Sevaka, sent for people and said, look, even if you send a petition to the Governor General, remember that I am the man who has to report on it. So come and ask me first, go back to the Governor General. Now see, that's what happens.
So in what other ways is the present system unsatisfactory?
In this sense, that the man does not want the village at all. He's young. Generally, people don't respect him as much as he respects the important man of the village. Then he transferred. So all these estate duty matters, to go to the ZA, as to valuation, all worth reports, Grama Sevaka. So if he doesn't know, he has to go ask somebody. Depends on whose advisor is there. Whereas that man knew. And also he had, if he was a good village headman, there were bad men who took bribes and also had used undue influence. But if he was a good man, he kept the village in order. But no Grama Sevaka, however good, can attain that amount of influence.
And as a question I want to say, I think a very vital point, the age. If he is a son of a former headman or a headman of some age, the elders also will look up to him.
Yeah.
Whereas the young man...
He just talked about it. When the Grama Sevaka rang about the place, nobody paid any regard to him. But some Grama Sevaka are very good men in the present election. But they can't still overcome the disadvantages of the situation that they are. They are strangers, they are young, and people don't look up to them.
What do you think are the recent trends in both in the 50s and 60s, which affected, say, the headman and also the civil servant, of fear of political interference and political trouble, interfering with administrative activities?
Well, that is a development of the post-Bandaranaike period. Really, up to the Bandaranaike period, the UNP administrators of the pre-Bandaranaike period did not interfere with the direct action by civil servants and others in the way that they are doing now. If they had anything to say, they did the permanent secretary, you know, so and so, see whether you can get it done, or whether this man is doing the right thing. That sort of thing, civil servants didn't have the feeling that if they didn't carry out the wishes of those in power, that they would be punished or shifted or pushed about. But it grew in the course of time. That is when civil servants took one side or the other, or tried to please the master. If the civil servant is impartial even today, it's quite safe.
I don't think that a bad trend, and I have feeling it even began with DS, was that the permanent secretaries began to be more and more yes men, or ride in with the
particular... That's called the permanent secretary. The permanent secretary really is a kind of opposition in the ministry. Should be. When the minister wants to do something, the permanent secretary should say, look, it's not right. I know a man who performed that function, that is Gulasena Soyuz. Even if it's one like he performed that function.
Any other?
I can't. Vaidyanathan.
Jayaratna has a reputation, but...
Yes, Jayaratna was also, I think, a man who did not allow the minister to go wrong or do something drastic for which he would regret afterwards.
Because I was wondering whether DS himself liked to have yes men, because for one thing he didn't get on with Edmund Rodrigo early on.
But he at one time he was a man who got on.
Yes. And Edmund Rodrigo was rather independent type. And also I think I heard something in the 48-51 period he got rid of one or two who had been rather independent. So that way it affects the others too, you see, one or two cases.
But I can't remember when he got rid of his body. On that count. Only on the ground of the election.
Yeah, but how would you assess DS as a man and as a minister?
He's practical. Man.
Practical.
And you see, he had his own technique of doing things. He's a very useful from a politician's point of view. He defended public office in Parliament. He never criticized
them. Never criticized them.
And if anybody attacked him, he would stand up for them. But he would go and tell them, don't do this sort of thing and so on afterwards in the sanctum of his ministry. Yeah, that's quite high quality.
Would you say that politically he also had a very good sense of timing?
Yes.
someone who had a great respect for him commented that in the 48-51 period he seemed to be somewhat on the decline. At least the performance of the government was rather disappointing. But
he had a very large majority. Mm-hmm. But there was no difference.
For what reason did Banda leave the party?
I don't forget exactly the immediate cause. But I think the cause was that on some occasion, you see the two people who were to be D.S.'s successors were Sir John and Banda.
Mm-hmm.
I think he felt that his future wasn't there.
Had he been promised anything when his support was, when they made a bargain in 48, the D.S. didn't have a straight majority?
I don't know. Whether there was any such thing.